You are now tuned into
Culture Rich. Culture Rich.
Welcome to Culture Rich Conversations, where we explore the Black lived experience in Alaska and beyond. Today's episode is the first of a two-part series on healthy relationships and the prevention of domestic violence, specifically for couples in rural communities. As a city with a population of less than 40,000 people, Juneau and the surrounding communities are considered rural. Over the next two episodes, we'll hear from front runners in the field of domestic violence intervention and prevention. I'm your host, Christina Michelle. Today, we're talking with several staff members from AWARE, Juneau's emergency shelter serving survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you may know how passionate I am about this work. And in the interest of full disclosure, I also serve as the Outreach and Engagement Director at AWARE. I'm really excited to wear both hats today and dive deep into this conversation. AWARE is committed to nurturing stronger, safer relationships, and we'll learn from experts at AWARE about what a healthy relationship is, keys to achieving, and most importantly, maintaining one. In the studio today, we have Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, who, as she likes to say, has been at AWARE since the 1900s and has served in lots of roles from children's program coordinator to executive director. Welcome, Sarah Lynn.
Thank you, Christina.
And Natalie Watson, AWARE's prevention manager, who has been with the organization for almost 10 years. Welcome, Natalie.
Hi, Christina.
Natalie, can you share a little bit about your work in your role at AWARE?
Yeah, I have been lucky enough to have this position of prevention at AWARE, so I get to do things like go into the high schools and teach healthy and unhealthy relationships. I also help teach our healthy relationships for women class, and I do other presentations around the community.
Awesome. And Ben Horton, who is a JCAP facilitator. JCAP stands for Juneau Choice and Accountability Program, and it is AWARE's Batterer Intervention Program. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you, Christina. Great to be here.
And Ben, can you share a little bit about your role at AWARE and the amount of time that you've been in that role?
For sure. So it was over 10 years ago now that I was first encountered AWARE, and I was first invited to examine how my relationships were being impacted by internalized patriarchal masculinity. I came through AWARE intervention and prevention programming. Since then, it's been kind of off and on, but overall, it's been over 5 years that I've been involved in developing and implementing the Juneau Choice and Accountability Program. I think probably just call it JCAP from here on out. And this is, focused on promoting personal accountability and safety in relationships where the use of violence has necessitated crisis intervention. And I've dabbled a little bit in various AWARE prevention programs and direct services as well.
So excited to have you. Welcome, Ben. Sarah Lynn, can you tell us a little bit about your work at AWARE and the time that you've been there?
Oh, I sure can. As you said, I started at AWARE in the 1900s, and when I first came to AWARE, I was a counselor for children, and that was really fulfilling and wonderful work. Over time, my job changed, and as you said, I've done many different jobs at AWARE, maybe every job, although not always with the job title. As you said, I was working as executive director. That was a big chunk of time. And my time ended with AWARE primarily working with JCAP, the men's program, and yes, helping men learn about healthy relationships with themselves and with their partners and with their community and with their families.
Excellent. So together on this panel today, we have over 50 years of experience. So we're in for a real treat today. I can't wait to get into this conversation. Some of you know my affiliation with Aware as my employer. So I'm sitting down today not only with subject matter experts, but these are also my colleagues. And I am really excited to hear what is going to be unpacked today. So Sarah Lynn, can you start us off with just some history about Aware and how Aware came to be in the community of Juneau?
Sure. As I understand that in the now we're going back earlier in the 1970s, actually, in the women's movement, which came on the tail or the coattails of the civil rights movement. So in the 1970s, women started to get together in something called CR groups, consciousness raising, and basically they would sit around the kitchen table and drink coffee and talk about their lives. And what they realized was that many of them had experiences of domestic or sexual violence. Mm-hmm. And each of them thought that this was their own individual experience. And of course, it came to be known that actually this was a societal problem, that there was something bigger going on. And in 1977, Aware happened in Juneau by a strong group of women who came together to create this organization. Even without a home, there had been a number of rapes that occurred. And so it started with a crisis line, and people were answering the crisis line in their own homes. Mm. The first director, Karen Robinson, talked about people coming to her boat. She lived on a boat with her son, and that was a safe place for people. Over time, Aware grew and rented a space in Lemon Creek, and then was able to purchase a building, the what's now the
the hostel?
Yeah, the hostel in downtown Juneau. And then in 1985, Aware opened its facility on Glacier Avenue. That was a time when there was money in the state and money to build buildings to help keep survivors safe.
Wow.
Yeah.
So since 1985, Aware has been supporting survivors of domestic violence at the emergency shelter through the crisis line, and the services have expanded, obviously, over the years. And so there's support for housing and for legal and a children's program and all the things, and then the Batterers Intervention Program, which we'll hear more about later in the conversation. There's something new that Aware is doing, and it's really focusing on prevention. And I'm wondering if, Sarah Lynn, if you can speak to that. Like, what, why the pivot into prevention when Aware has historically been more in the role of serving people who have already experienced domestic violence?
So if I can back up a little bit, when Aware... In the 1980s, Aware did have a prevention program, which primarily focused on education in the schools. So what Aware realized was, like, people don't know that this is a problem. People don't know that this is okay. So if we can provide education and information, then people could come forward and it can enhance safety. What you're pointing to though, Christina, is how Aware's prevention efforts have become more and more focused to meet the needs of the community. And is it okay if I talk about what we're...
Of course.
Yeah. So right now, Aware is looking at, and this is a very new group for couples. So we've done prevention work with women. We've done prevention work with men. We've done work with students. You know, Natalie can talk about that. But adult couples, we have not worked with as couples before. So it's extremely exciting, I think, and hopeful and full of possibilities. And I think everyone feels pretty enthusiastic about it.
Yes, absolutely. So let's make the distinction between the prevention and the intervention. So Natalie, can you speak to the prevention work that you do. And then, Ben, I'm going to ask you to just explain the intervention work that you do with JCAP.
Yeah, for us, prevention means avoiding victimization in the first place. And we know that when people have their basic needs met, when they know how to spot healthy versus unhealthy relationships and behaviors, and when they find their voice, their power, they can avoid ever becoming a chronic victim. So some of the trainings I do are about spotting those kind of warning signs to, you know, learning what are the signs of healthy relationships, what are the signs of unhealthy, and what are the signs that an unhealthy relationship might actually be becoming abusive, and then letting everyone know that there are resources available if they do find themselves in that situation.
Thanks so much. And Ben?
For the intervention, yeah, kind of to borrow Natalie's language, in this case, victimization has already occurred, right? And so, you know, when this has taken place, our goal is to, you know, intervene and create as much safety as possible. And some of what that looks like is, I mean, accountability, as, you know, the name in JCAP implies, accountability is kind of at the center of that. So often when guys come to our program, there's defensiveness or blaming, like, I only did it because, you know, they did this first, or I was tired, or, you know, X, Y, and Z. And, you know, our goal is to kind of get the men to look past those defenses and look past those kind of excuses, I guess, and get a not only a bigger picture of like what's going on, that this is not like an isolated individual thing. This is kind of directly tied into, you know, things that men have been taught by, you know, growing up in a patriarchal culture and learning about kind of the full impact of violence against women and violence against children, and investigating and learning more about the real effects of that violence. And all the while working to really take responsibility for the actions done and the harm caused. And hopefully, you know, the goal is with all of this education and introspection, the guys can develop new habits that prevent that violence from happening again and again, create more safety and accountability in those relationships.
Right. We do the prevention work. We do the intervention work. We do the education. And it sounds like education is really the foundation of everything that we're doing here. Natalie, can you talk to us about the characteristics of a healthy relationship?
Yeah, so I think it all boils down to respect and equality rather than power and control. So when I ask high school students to call out the aspects of healthy relationships, they seem to know it. So they call out things like trust, mm-hmm. safety, communication, honesty, support, kindness, respect, all these things. They seem to already know these things, but it's just about kind of making it part of their habits. I think a big problem is that we get a lot of our ideas about relationships from media, and media is there to entertain us, right? With sex, violence, drama. So you can't really get good relationship ideas from watching media. And not all of us grew up watching healthy relationships around us. So there is some purpose in educating people, making sure that everyone gets the same education about what are these aspects. So for me, I think it boils down to, like I said, equality and respect. So you can pay attention to how your partner behaves. Do they respect you as an individual for who you are? You know, not what you look like, not what you can do for them. And can they share power with you in decisions? You know, can you negotiate? You know, who's going to do this like gross or boring task, especially, you know, when you're living together, there's a lot of negotiation. And also when you set a boundary or you communicate your needs and your painful emotions, do they listen? Do they respect that? And most importantly, do they actually change their behavior when it really is important for the health of the relationship? So that's the best sign that it is healthy.
I love that, especially because we do live in a society where there's so much glorification of the roses and the dinners and the vacations, and everybody has a highlight reel, and they're only showing these really like overly romanticized versions or aspects of their relationship. And so then people tend to compare their real relationship to the highlights of somebody's social media. And then they're like, well, I'm not on vacation every other week, and where are my flowers? And so, you know, there's this idea that if it doesn't look all beautiful and glamorous and we're never arguing or never having any conflict, then it's not the ideal relationship. Sarah Lynn, can you speak to us about, just from your experience and what you've observed, like why that might be that these healthy communication skills often are not taught as children and in the home?
Yeah, I think you named it. We're not taught in the home, and we're not taught in school. Like, we're seldom taught how to communicate. So we internalize what we see. So what we grow up with, what's happening in our home, we think that's normal communication, which it is normal communication, and it may not be healthy communication. Also in schools, in the media, as we've talked about, you know, on social media. So what we see and what we experience are not always healthy. Mm-hmm. And so some of us can recognize that, and some of us don't recognize it. We just internalize it and think that's the way to communicate. And in fact, part of the reason AWARE is offering this class is to try to prevent violence before it starts, because if people don't know how to communicate and are escalating perhaps in anger and with the potential to act out with violence, if we can teach them other ways before it gets to that point, then success, right?
Absolutely.
Stronger, safer relationship.
That's right. So what are some examples of unhealthy communication? And I'll just raise my hand first and say, you know, in taking a communication course many years ago, I learned, for example, that the silent treatment was emotional abuse. And I didn't know that. I thought that if I withheld my communication, my verbal communication, that I actually was doing a service to my partner, because I didn't want to be, you know, overly expressive in a time where I hadn't been able to regulate my emotions yet. And so I thought it better to just say nothing. But then when I really thought about it after learning that that's not a healthy way of communicating, I did see how it was manipulative, right? It's like I could justify the silent treatment by saying, well, I'm not ready to talk and I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I'm going to not speak yet. But really what I'm saying is I'm going to make you suffer. Like, and I'm not going to say a word and make you wonder what I'm thinking and torture you with that until I'm ready to tell you what I'm really thinking, right? So, and I don't even know where I learned that. I can't tie it back to anything that I observed in, you know, my childhood or from my parents or anything, but, you know, I justified it as a good way of communicating. And so that's not a healthy communication technique. What are other things that we may not even realize are unhealthy communication?
Well, that's what's so interesting about that is, and that might have been a better communication technique than escalating, right?
Okay.
So it's on a continuum, if you will.
Sure.
So, you know, what might have been more healthy would be to say, I need to take a break. I can't talk about this right now. Let's check in in an hour, tomorrow, whatever.
Okay. So the not speaking is not the problem. It's the indefinite, don't know when we'll speak again. could be the problem.
And, I mean, you identified the problem, I think, really beautifully.
Yeah, like the manipulation. Sure. Yeah, so we're going to talk more about this when we come back. The voices that you hear if you're just joining us are myself, Christina Michelle, Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, Natalie Watson, and Ben Horton. And we're having a conversation about healthy relationships and the prevention of domestic violence in our communities. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you in partnership with and by sponsorship from AWARE. AWARE and the Black Awareness Association share a commitment to community well-being, safety, and social justice. We thank them for their support of these vital conversations. Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Earlier in the segment today, we laid the foundation of what a healthy relationship is with experts joining us from AWARE and the work that AWARE has done in the community in service to survivors of domestic violence. Ben, can you talk to us about what intimate partner violence is and how do you know if you are at risk of being a victim of intimate partner violence?
It's a really good question. I think to start answering, I'll kind of point back to a little bit what we talked about in the previous segment. Often in JCAP, we talk about violence being on kind of this spectrum or this continuum, as we talked about before, and this can cover a huge range of communication styles, I suppose, and leading to also much larger acts of violence. This could be speaking over, claiming the truth, using the silent treatment, on one end, maybe kind of, as we go further along, we get more into yelling or, stomping your foot or other kinds of more intimidating actions. And then, of course, on the, other far end of the spectrum, we have real, actual physical and sexual violence. So I think I want to include all of that in there and make sure that's all contained, I guess, in the bucket when we're talking about violence and interpersonal and intimate partner violence. Of course, once we move farther along that continuum and farther along the spectrum and we're getting closer to the, physical and sexual violence side, once, safety has really been compromised, once freedom of movement, freedom of expression is something that someone doesn't feel safe to have or doesn't have access to, then the need for crisis intervention really becomes more immediate and more important. So with that, I would say, really ultimately any relationship, is at risk for having some level of intimate partner violence in it. And I think a lot of it comes down to like where exactly in the continuum we fall. And is there a need in terms of JCAP, a need for crisis intervention? And if so, let's step in there and intervene on that violence.
Excellent. I just wanted to make the distinction between a behavior that might be uncomfortable and undesirable versus one that might be an indicator of future violence. Because, that yelling is one of the things that can be an unhealthy way of communicating that just was taught. It's just taught. It's just learned. It can be cultural. And it doesn't mean that violence mm-hmm. is coming, right? And so there's a big mm-hmm. range, and I love how you made it clear, helped us to see that it escalates. It's not just this thing, and then we're like, oh no, there might be violence coming just because my partner raised their voice.
Yeah, I think also we're looking for a pattern of behavior versus an isolated incident. So if a partner has a pattern of abusing power and control in the relationship, then that's an unsafe and unhealthy relationship. At the same time, you and Ben did a good job of speaking about how those behaviors manifest. And I think when physical violence comes is when the other techniques or tactics of abuse stop working.
Oh,
so then
that makes so much sense. So if I'm a controlling person with the potential to be physically abusive, I may not have to be physically abusive if I can control you just with maybe an intimidating stare or glare,
exactly.
Or if I can control you with my words. But when that stops working, when the stare stops working, then I have to say something. And then when my words stop working, I might have to throw something. And when that stops working, I might put my hands on you.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. So what happens if violence does occur? Like, there's physical violence. If it happens, one time, is that a deal breaker or is it an indicator that this is a thing that's you should probably get out of there because it's going to continue to happen? Ben, I'll have you go first and then Sarah Lynn.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I mean, I wish it was as easy to say once it's happened once, get out of there. But there's so many things that are tied into it. You know, there can be kids and, you know, rent and all of these different like social, you know, social things that make it difficult to just say, I'm out of here. You know, maybe you've been married and in a relationship for a long time. To be safe, getting some space in that relationship and getting out of that relationship is ultimately the, you know, the healthy thing to do, at least while the violence, you know, is occurring for sure. And I know it's not always that easy and not always that simple. I do know that if violence has occurred once, it is likely to happen again. So that's really something important to keep in mind. And, you know, as y'all were talking about, it's as things stop becoming effective, we do see this escalation into physical violence. And then I think also what we see is once the physical violence has occurred, then that can like underscore all of the other different tactics. So now the dirty look is not just the dirty look. Now the dirty look is maybe physical violence, you know, is coming next, or like I've done this before, maybe I'll do this again. And that can make the relationship a lot more scary and a lot more dangerous, you know? So
I think it's a really good question. And I think each of us answers it for ourselves, you know, for reasons that Ben gave, as well as, you know, like what's happening in our lives and also what our lines are, you know, what crosses a line for us.
So can you do something to stop the, if let's say you see the escalation happening where you're like, okay, well, he talks kind of gruffly to me and I'm okay with it. It's just part of his personality. But then you notice the intimidating glares are coming, or, you know, maybe he's telling you can't go somewhere when you really want to go. And he's like, no, we're going to stay home tonight. You're not going anywhere. And he's not physically keeping you from leaving, but he's trying to use his words to control you. So is there a time where you can say, you know what, I feel like this is going somewhere I don't want it to go, and you can do something to stay in the relationship but stay safely? And if so, what are those things? Oh, go ahead, Sarah Lynn.
Well, I was going to say, I think the challenge in your question is that I think for each person on the receiving end of that violence, the answer might be different. And so, you know, if I feel safe enough to say to my partner, hey, what the heck is going on? Like, this is not okay. Then I can say that. But if I don't feel safe enough to say that, then I might need to do something else. And how my partner's going to respond. I think what's key in that, though, is that the person on the receiving end is paying attention to themselves and what's happening for them. So how do I feel inside? Do I feel safe enough to say something or to not say something? If not, what are my next steps or what are my other options? If I do, how do I say what I need to say?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you feel like you're in that gray area, right, where you're not comfortable with your partner's behavior, but you're also not afraid of your partner, you just don't like where this is going, and you do see that there's potential for it to get worse, JCAP is an option. Because I think a lot of people believe that JCAP is only like once you've done something really terribly egregious and maybe gone to jail, or maybe instead of going to jail, you get court ordered to JCAP. And so it's just the worst case scenario, right, that comes to mind for people when they think of JCAP. But it is actually a place where any man who wants to take accountability for his potentially controlling and abusive behaviors can come to unpack those things, to unravel, to learn and to explore and to gain new ways of thinking and believing that are healthier for themselves and for their partners. Which is, that's really beautiful work. I wish that it was required for like all boys. As soon as you turn 18, you must take JCAP.
Or maybe before.
Or
right?
Maybe.
What if you could learn it intrinsically, like from the time you were tiny?
Yeah. If you could learn it from in the home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if it was reinforced in school, and then if you need a refresher, you can go to JCAP later.
But, you know, you ask a really good question, Christina, like what's offered, when you don't feel afraid, but there are behaviors that are not healthy, because I think the healthy relationships class for women that AWARE offers also is a venue for that. And I also think, you know, the PrEP program. Yeah.
So, Natalie, can you tell us just a couple of the lessons that happen for healthy relationships for women? And then we're going to talk about what happens for couples.
Yeah, so we have 10 lessons in healthy relationships for women. And we start out by talking a little bit about abuse. So like knowing what those red flags are. So identifying that, talking about dysfunctional family patterns. And then we start going into, you know, our rights in relationships, and then boundaries. So how to set boundaries kind of based on those rights. That's a couple lessons. We also talk about all the painful emotions that come up for us in maybe unhealthy relationships, or maybe when we're trying to get out of a relationship. So kind of dealing with all those. And then we end with setting goals and learning all the aspects of healthy relationships, identifying those healthy relationships maybe that we already have in our lives, strengthening those.
Beautiful. So we have a resource for women, and then we have this resource for men. And now, it's 2026, and we have this amazing resource for couples. Natalie, talk to us about the PrEP course for couples that AWARE is newly offering.
Yeah, we're so excited to offer this, our first couples class. So PrEP stands for Prevention and Relationship Education Program. It's designed for couples of any gender who are committed to their relationship and who are looking to build skills and strengthen that relationship. You know, the CDC cited PrEP as showing evidence of preventing intimate partner violence. PrEP is actually the most studied relationship program in the world. Over 1 million people have already participated in it. So we really know that it's evidence-based. It's really going to work. For AWARE, we are specifically looking for couples who've been together at least a year, who have no history of violence in their current relationship, and who can commit together to those full 10 weeks.
I really love the forward movement and the progression of the PrEP course, because there is a place for work individually, right? Like, as a woman, there's a place for me to do my own work and to get clear on what my boundaries are, and, you know, to understand that I do have rights and responsibilities in a relationship and how to process my emotions and all of that. And the same work needs to be done for the men. But then there is a time where we need to come together as couples and commit to learning some tools and understanding each other better, and then being able to implement them together. And so I love that AWARE has this new offering, and it just feels like expansion. It feels like a breath of fresh air. It feels like additional resources. And again, just forward movement. It's very progressive. So Natalie, I know that you registered for the PrEP course, and you're also one of the facilitators. And just to give a little bit of background, AWARE received a grant to send key staff members to the training to facilitate PrEP, and you were one of them. And you also decided to sign up, which is awesome. So talk to us a little bit about why you decided to do it as well as facilitate.
Yeah, well, two reasons. The professional one was, I thought I'll be a better facilitator if I first get the student side, and I feel what that's like to be
for
on
sure.
That side. But also, my husband and I, even though we've been together about 20 years, we still have issues. We still have conflict and some kind of painful emotions or annoying behaviors that seem to keep coming up. You know, once I was so frustrated with him, I dumped a bucket of cold water on his head. It's like I also I'm still working on myself. I still need some skills. He needs some skills.
I want to say I'm sure he deserved it, but that's probably not the right thing to say. Like, I got you, Natalie.
Yes. I mean, our personalities are so different. Our upbringings were quite different, you know, especially how we handle conflict. He grew up where it was normal to yell and curse at each other during conflicts. I did not grow up with that. So that we just have some kind of natural kind of friction happening there. So I'm really excited to use the prep course to strengthen our relationship, to kind of work on those issues, and maybe to also get closer, to learn, you know, how to have more fun together. So some of the positive stuff as well.
Yeah. I think it just speaks to Aware's wholeheartedness and, you know, and value of authenticity too, because one thing Aware's executive director, I've heard her say so many times that sticks with me, is there's no us in them. Like, there's no, just because we work here and do this work doesn't mean that we don't do the work ourselves. Yeah. So thank you for modeling that. So with the prep course in particular and other things, there are other resources, you know, such as couples counseling and therapy and things like that. But they all take a large amount of time, I would say. Like with prep, it is a 10-week commitment. And sometimes people have a hard time, like they recognize that they need the help, but they're also having a hard time reconciling that with their work schedules and with finding childcare and just all the other things. So, Sarah Lynn, how would you speak to that if a couple's like, I'm kind of on the edge, I feel like I need this, but I also am having a really hard time figuring out when or if I want to commit?
So then I would ask them to reflect on why they say they need it and what they're willing to invest. Because I think signing up for this class is an investment in yourself and in your relationship.
You know what I think of?
What do you think?
Is like, what happens if you don't? Right? Yeah, because it's like, I could keep going, and what happens if I don't is we're going to keep getting the thing that makes us know we need this right now versus what happens if we do.
Right. Like, yeah, you have nothing to lose by doing this.
Absolutely.
Right. Like,
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So, again, if you're just joining us, I'm Christina Michelle. I'm here with the staff at Aware, Ben Horton, Natalie Watson, and Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, and we are talking about healthy relationships, specifically resources that are available for couples who live in rural communities. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. We're continuing a conversation with the staff from Aware about healthy relationships and the prevention of domestic violence. Earlier, before we went to break, Natalie, you mentioned sometimes there can be conflicts even in your relationship, which is a healthy relationship with your husband you've been with for over 20 years, but you had mentioned something about like your differences in your upbringing, right, that lend to conflict. And it just makes me think of when people have cultural differences and how those differences show up in relationships and how they do have potential to cause conflict. Can someone speak to what that looks like in a relationship and how we can navigate those cultural differences?
Sure. And maybe I can speak personally.
Sure.
As a Jewish person. So I was raised as a religious Jewish person, and there are rules or Jewish laws about what is okay to eat and what is not okay to eat. And one of the things not okay to eat is meat that hasn't been killed in a particular way. When I would go out to dinner with a partner, always we would get something with tofu. And my partner was very generous, like, not a problem, not a problem, not a problem, until one day they said, I just wish sometime we could get chicken. And it really lit something for me. It illuminated why I do that, because in fact, I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat animals for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so why couldn't we have chicken? It was no longer about my Jewishness, although my Jewishness was the pattern. But why couldn't we order food with chicken and I would just not eat the chicken? So that didn't become an escalated problem,
right?
But it could.
Sure.
And there are many things that could that are like that.
That's a great example, and I think of something that could be an escalator might be if you were raised in a culture where women are subservient. And if they are not behaving in the way that you believe that they should, and that's way different from, can we just order chicken sometimes?
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, did you want to add anything to that?
I think you make a great point there, Christina. And it's the thing that really comes to mind for me with this again is, do I feel safe? Is this something that I can except when it comes to the chicken versus tofu, it's maybe pretty easy to be like, you know, I can do this and it's okay. But, you know, with the other example, if someone's coming from a culture where, you know, the woman is supposed to be subservient and kind of do her husband's bidding or, you know, so on and so forth, the situation changes pretty greatly. We are, you know, individuals and we deserve to have our individual freedom and, yeah, freedom of movement, freedom of expression, as I said before. And if that is the thing that you're being asked to give up, yeah, the question becomes a lot different. And the health of the relationship, I think, gets called into question, you know, quite a bit more than, you know, whether we're ordering chicken or not.
Sure.
I think one thing that's really important when talking about all of this is the issue of vulnerability, because often to be able to have a conversation requires partners to be vulnerable. And people are not always comfortable being vulnerable. And that's where things can get dangerous, I think.
Sure.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of strength in vulnerability and also a lot of discomfort.
I was just going to say, like, why do you think it's so difficult to be vulnerable? But that discomfort, that fear of being seen, that, you know, what if they don't like what they see? If they know, you know, the real me or this side of me, it takes a lot of trust, I think, in yourself and in your relationship.
Right. And what if I open up and they use it against me?
Sure.
Right. Like, there's so much fear in, like, you were speaking about fear of rejection. It's a risk. It's a relationship.
And just like anything else that you want to be good at, you need resources. You need support. You need examples. You need guidance. And, you know, specifically living in a community where we are considered rural, we don't have a lot of access to resources for relationships. We don't have, you know, a lot of great examples or places that we can go to do this one-on-one work. So with PrEP being offered now by AWARE, it's just another, it's filling a gap.
Like, also, you know, in rural communities and in Juneau, like small towns, people don't often want to come together, or there may be some fear in coming together because everyone will know their business, or everyone will know, like, oh, they're in this group, or oh, they're in this group, and make some judgment about it. And so that makes it, I think, extra hard when we talk about culture and who's participating and how people participate. You know, this prep class that AWARE's offering, I know, is in person. Mm-hmm. But I know in the future there's potential for a Zoom class. And I think that might get more people in outlying communities who would like to participate and might feel safer in doing so.
Oh, my goodness. That's going to be so exciting. So this first round is the pilot for healthy relationships. And we've already identified ways that we might be able to serve at a higher level, with people asking if there's going to be childcare. That's not something that was able to be offered this time, but there's potential for that in the future. And then I'm being able to reach more people in the outlying communities by offering it virtually. Excellent. So in talking about some actual skills, because that is a big part of PrEP. It is all about learning skills for healthy communication and conflict resolution, understanding your partner's personality better, prioritizing fun and connection, which often gets lost the longer a couple has been together and the more responsibilities they have and all of the things. Can one of you give an example of a skill that might be taught at the prep course?
I can talk about the speaker-listener technique.
Okay.
So this is a really helpful skill if you or your partner often don't feel heard or understood by the other. So it involves letting one partner hold the floor at a time, while the other just focuses on listening and then reflecting back what they heard and understood. And then the speaker can correct that or add some detail. And finally, that speaker should feel fully heard and understood. And then, you know, the listener becomes the speaker and they go back and forth. So this technique avoids those frustrating arguments that just seem to go around and around without either partner fully grasping each other's point of view, and usually the tension is escalating. So it does involve going slow at first, but the idea is that you're going to resolve this issue rather than it coming up again and again.
Okay, so only one person holds the floor. Do you hold something in your hand too, or is there like a visual cue that I'm the one on the floor right now?
I think if it's necessary, that can be helpful, but
I feel like I would need it. I think like I need the talking stick. Thank you for that. I mean, that's just one little thing that we heard today that you can take home and you can practice with your partner, is when they're speaking, allowing them to say what they have to say without, you know, trying to interject or prepare your answer, and then just giving it back to them, and then it's their turn to do the same. But are there benefits beyond just my relationship with my partner? Are these skills and the work that AWARE does only specifically for the enhancement of my romance?
Oh, what a great question. These skills can be used anytime, any place with anybody, right? So even the listener speaker technique, to be heard like that generally as you move through life, or and to hear people like that, the validation is immense and immensely helpful. So I think the skills really easily flow throughout a person's experience and all relationships, including with themselves, you know, how they hear themselves. And this class, the PrEP class, is all about skill building. So it's not counseling. It's not like, let me tell you what my partner did. It's none of that. It's purely skill building and educational.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. You may be familiar with the name Tony Porter, who is the CEO of an organization called A Call to Men. I became aware of him through a TED Talk that he did many years ago about the ending of domestic violence and how it is a man's work, how women have been doing this work for many, many years. And if we as women could end it, it would be ended by now. And so his belief and his call and his organization is A Call to Men, and introducing the idea that it's the man's work to recognize his abusive and toxic behavior and also to change it, and then to hold other men accountable. Something that comes to mind, and I had this conversation like many, many years ago when I was like deeply entrenched in my church in California, and they always had these couples, they always had these singles resources. It's like, oh, we've got this singles seminar and the singles workshop and the singles need to read these books and all of this, but it was only the women showing up. And I told the pastor, you know, after about 4 or 5 years of going to all the singles things, and he's like, hey, sister, you coming to the next singles, whatever? And I was like, no, I'm not coming, because until you do something specifically for men, you can quit doing these things. Like, why are the women always the ones doing the work? Like, we're the ones buying the books. We're the ones coming to the workshops. We're the ones willing to invest. And the men, like, for what? Like, why are we doing it if they're not doing any work? And so when you do something specifically for men, then maybe I'll come back. So then can you talk to us about what that community of being in JCAP looks like? Because men typically don't seek resources.
I think men don't see it as their responsibility. I think men don't see developing the relationship or maybe supporting the children or fostering a healthy relationship so much as their responsibility. I think often men still see their responsibility as going to work, making money, come home. If I can, you know, provide materially X, Y, and Z, then I'm playing my role. And I think it's about, you know, expanding that role and expanding that commitment to go deeper than that kind of material level. There's a quote here from Bell Hooks that we talk about in JCAP, and I want to read it. Let's repeat that. This is the second half of a definition of patriarchy that we use, and it says, patriarchy as a system has denied males access to full emotional well-being, which is not the same as feeling rewarded, successful, or powerful, because of one's capacity to assert control over others. To truly address male pain and male crisis, we must as a nation be willing to expose the harsh reality that patriarchy has damaged men in the past and continues to damage them in the present. If patriarchy were truly rewarding to men, the violence and addiction in family life that is so all-pervasive would not exist. Wow. And to me, this is relevant now because I think it's common that men don't really know what to do with themselves beneath the job and the money and what are often kind of surface level relationships with other men in their lives. And I think this quote is so powerful because it really invites men to ask themselves, like, what am I when all of that is stripped away? And what do I bring to the table? And am I comfortable with myself and who I am, you know, just kind of in a vacuum like that. And I think men need other men in their lives to ask them the hard questions, to build these deeper relationships in order to get to that place. And I think that's often what we do see taking place in JCAP. We have guys who are willing to call each other out on, you know, blind spots that they have or ways that they're not, you know, taking accountability still, or, you know, defenses that they have up, or, you know, ways that they could be showing up deeper for their family. And so I think that's one of the things that I do really appreciate about the class, is that I'm working on myself. And as I learn more about myself, I can also help you, my other fellow man in the class, to see some of these things and get you to kind of like ask the next question to get you to dig deeper and, you know, help create a fuller picture of how am I showing up for myself, my family, my partner, my kids, my community.
If someone's listening and is interested in being a part of a community of men who are growing and learning and wanting to better themselves for them, not only themselves, but for their partner. How can they join JCAP, Sarah Lynn?
They can contact JCAP, which is through email, jcap@awareak.org. There is a phone number, 907-957-1532.
I'm really glad that we get the opportunity to share about this. And so people, again, they understand that you don't have to be ordered to JCAP. You don't have to be in a position where things have already gone terribly wrong before you can come and take advantage of this resource that AWARE offers. Well, this has been a really wonderful conversation, just packed with so much wisdom and nuggets and insights. And I am excited to continue this conversation next week. But as we close out today, if you could summarize what we talked about here today in one single piece of advice for healthy relationships, what would it be? Get help. Do it early. Do it often.
Face your fear.
Face your fear.
I mean, take a risk and go for it.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you don't, nothing's going to change. And so try to bump the pattern a little bit and yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Thanks, Sarah Lynn.
What comes to mind for me is often when we're in crisis, we see it as an excuse to kind of let go of some gentleness and let go of some consideration, I guess, for our partner. And I think getting to a point where when we recognize the crisis is coming, use that as an invitation to deepen the amount of gentleness that we carry and interact with, as opposed to, yeah, using it as an excuse to say, well, the crisis is coming, so I'm going to throw all that gentleness and kindness out the window and just go for it and yell and then do the thing that I've been doing.
Thanks, Ben.
My idea is actually pulled right from the prep curriculum, and that's do our part. And that just means focusing on what we are doing in the relationship over what we think our partner should be doing, because we can influence our partners, but really we can only control ourselves. And we do have a lot of control over ourselves to make better decisions, healthier decisions.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I am very grateful to you, Sarah Lynn, and to Natalie, and to you, Ben, for joining me here for this episode of Culture Rich Conversations and laying the groundwork for healthy relationships, part one. Today's conversation was every bit as insightful as I had hoped for, and in some ways, even more so. Ending intimate partner violence and fostering healthy relationships is a very nuanced subject, and it has a lot of layers to unpack. To continue exploring those layers, we'll be joined next week by Tony Porter, CEO of A Call to Men. Tony will delve deeper into the cultural shifts needed to end domestic violence and specifically call on men to take action in building safer, stronger relationships. You'll definitely want to be part of that conversation. And as always, we want to be the best part of your Tuesday, so we do hope that you'll tune in next week, same place, same time. Today's episode was produced in collaboration between AWARE, Al Wilson, and myself, Christina Michelle. Until next week, may your life be blessed and flow with ease. This has been Culture Rich Conversations. This project was supported by grant number 2523 SCIP-02, awarded by the Bureau of Justice Assistance. The Bureau of Justice Assistance is a component of the Department of Justice's Office of Justice Programs, which also includes the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the National Institute of Justice, the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, the Office for Victims of Crime, and the SMART Office. Points of view or opinions in this episode are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice.